Welcome to Healthy Brain, Happy Body, a podcast from the Northeast Region Biofeedback Society. I'm Dr. Saul Rosenthal, a health psychologist from the Boston area, and your host as we investigate the incredible connections between brain and body. We continue our creativity series today with Dr. Barbara Minton, a clinical psychologist, musician, and neuroscientist. Dr. Minton integrates music into her clinical work, finding therapeutic value for both psychological and physiological states. Her latest project, with guitarist Peppino D'Agostino, is Calm the Storm, music composed to help normalize brain networks associated with chronic pain, migraine, and insomnia. We talked about Calm the Storm, how she came to integrate creativity with neurotherapy, and the science behind the healing effects of sound. Barb, welcome to Healthy Brain, Happy Body.
Thank you. It's wonderful to be here.
So you have a really sort of an unusual take on all of this because you bring together psychology and neuroscience and music. How did you get here? What's your journey? What's your origin story?
You know, these are winding roads sometimes.
I'm sure they are.
Yeah. So I actually went to college as an undergraduate as a music major with the incredibly trendy instrument of pipe organ. And I got to my junior year of college in music and I was like, you know, I think this is going to be a tough way to make a living. And so I was looking around for other interests, and I landed in psychology. I'm so lucky because I just found psychology fascinating, and I got joint PhD in research and clinical work. And it's been a wonderful career. You know, I've had over a 40-year career doing all kinds of different things. And about, maybe 15 years ago, I found neurofeedback. And that became such an addition to my practice. It actually almost took over my clinical practice because so many people were seeking non-drug alternatives, or they'd tried everything. They'd tried talk therapy, they'd tried medication, they'd tried EMDR, they'd tried retreats, they'd tried everything they could think of, and they came and wanted to do something else. And so when you do neurofeedback, and do your listeners know what that is, or should I give
it? Yeah, most of the listeners will be clinicians.
Okay, so, you know, you start learning about the brain, and I started, actually what happened was Jim Evans, if you know who he is, was writing a book, and he knew that I was a musician from a long time ago. And he called me up and said, would you write a chapter for this book on music? And I said, well, yeah. And I started reading the literature. And honestly, I was stunned. I could not believe all this extant literature that was out there of the power of music on the body and the brain, and that it wasn't in clinical practice anywhere. And the things, a couple of studies really got to me. One of them was babies in neonatal intensive care units, when they played music to them, it paced their breathing. So they had fewer apneas. They gained weight faster. They got out of the hospital. This was like 30 minutes of music a day. And then I read another article that talked about how listening to curated music playlists reduced depression by 40%. And I'm just thinking, this is so simple. Like, why are we not doing this to everybody that comes through the door? And so I'm thinking about this and I'm like, we have to get this out in the real world so people are actually using it and it's not just sitting in these journals. And I started to have a passion for that. And then I started to think further, like, wow, if just kind of random music that researchers choose does this, couldn't we actually write curated music to train networks in the brain? Because we know that the brain tries to pattern itself after music. And Rusty Turner, Dr. Rusty Turner, did a really interesting study where they played Mozart under the pillow of people who had seizures at night, and it reduced their seizures by something like 80%. I mean, the findings are stunning. So I start thinking, well, if you can just do this with kind of random music, couldn't we actually compose music that was intentional, that would create more powerful patterning to help normalize the brain? And I also got obsessed with learning how to play the guitar at this time, which was just a few years ago, like 3 years ago. And my guitar teacher is a virtuosic fingerstyle guitarist. And so we worked together to put this music together. And then I did pre and post imaging to see if it was really working. So that's the story.
Okay. Well, and we'll go, there's a lot to dig into. We'll go into the different details, particularly about the album and that project. But one of the things I'm curious about is how these different areas of yourself, the clinician self, the musician self, the neuroscientist self, how do they inform each other? So, you know, as a clinician, you've talked about how you found music can be really helpful and you're starting to integrate that into your clinical work. Does it go the other way around as well? So how do these different parts of yourself interact and play together?
You know, that's such actually a deep and complicated question, I think. And I probably don't have the really best answer to that. Because one part of me is very analytical and this other part of me is very intuitive. And I think I have this sort of spiritual aspect that is out there too, this sort of energetic thing. And somehow these things all came together around this event. And I really felt, I think if I would use a sort of a traditional religious nomenclature to this, is I felt a calling to do this. Like how many people really know music and really also know the neuroscience and also have the motivation to try to put this stuff together? It seemed like there was some sort of unique energy for me around this. And how that all integrates, it's just hard to say. But it really became a calling, or sort of people would say an obsession, something like that. And it was, I think maybe it was a way of tying all these different aspects of myself together. Because I love research. I love looking at data. But I also love that sort of how music goes beyond words. And when I play pipe organ or keyboard or guitar, like it creates a reality that is very hard to express verbally.
We are limited. Language limits us in some ways, although we're such verbal animals.
Yeah. And when you sit in a room with people and there, you can palpably feel this, right? When you sit in the room, a room with people where music is moving, you know, that quietness before people applaud, or this feeling that seems to go deeper, and being able to access that in a clinical way is stunningly beautiful. So, but you asked the question about me, and that, I think it's a very complicated question for me myself. I just know I felt like it was something I had to do.
Well, then let's talk about Calm the Storm. You've sort of said that there are a lot of steps that went into its planning and to its implementation. As much as you want, could you walk us through that process?
Yeah, so I'm going to back up one album. So I initially worked with a guy named Callum Graham, who's from Victoria, BC. And if you want to see his music, he's also a virtuosic guitarist. His website's callumgraham.com. And he was actually my first teacher and first guitar teacher. And I was like, look, I just want to see, can we make theta? Can we make alpha? Can we make beta? You know, can we compose these songs? And he said, yeah, let's give it a try. And what we found was actually quite fascinating, because people's reaction to music is complicated, and the QEEGs actually gave us a lot of insight to this. So one of the songs, for example, that we composed to make beta, some people found very calming. And so if I said to you, like, Who do you think would find an activating song calming with what you know about QEEGs? What would you say?
That's a good question. I can imagine somebody who actually had a lot of beta would find it calming.
Yeah, so people who had excess high beta found when we played a song that we thought would make beta, they actually calmed down. And they were like, mm-hmm. Oh, this music is so relaxing. And we're like, this is like electric guitar at 120 beats per minute, percussion, all this kind of stuff. And so is this idea, what's beautiful about QEEG is it really shows the interaction between what the music is bringing to the situation and what the person is bringing to the situation. So the music isn't doing the same thing to everybody. It's doing something different depending on what you're coming into the room with. And I think this is so important. We like to talk about personalized medicine and personalized approaches, but so many of our approaches are still not personalized. The thing that's great about music and people who do neurofeedback is we have the capacity to actually, you know, you could do a 3-minute pre and post QEEG. So that was the first thing, and it really made me realize that for many people, these things did have a straightforward effect, but for some people, the effects were not straightforward, and we need to think about this in a more complicated way. And of course, this gets lost in research because you're always looking at a mean, or, you know, you're not looking at individual responses necessarily. So then, after I did that with Callum and I started working with Peppino D'Agostino, who's the person I did Calm the Storm with, I thought, you know, there's extant data in the literature about chronic pain. And we also know about chronic pain networks with neurofeedback. And we know about the salience network and the pain network and suffering networks, all these different networks in the brain. And there's data in the music literature about how if people listen to calming music, that not only does it affect their pain registration in the moment, but it affects their pain long-term. It will actually, if they listen to it long-term, it will change their pain over time. Now, none of this has brain imaging. It's all self-report data. And so I started thinking, well, if we look at the chronic pain network, and those are also related to the insomnia network, of course, and the migraine network, and just kind of general stress, if we want to call it that, which a lot of people are under these days. And we know the frequencies that these networks are operating on, which is usually like excess fast waves, right? So we want to put in waves, not just frequency. So I still don't know which of the elements of music are the operative ones or if it's a combination. So we look at timbre. So timbre is the color of a sound. So you can have an oboe play the same note as a trumpet, and they're going to sound very different to us. And so for timbres, we use these kind of warm shimmering sounds on the pipe organ with these sort of subtle bass sounds, and then the warm intimacy of the guitar. So that's like timbre. And then you have frequency. So we arranged these songs so that they didn't have a lot of super high notes. So we weren't putting a lot of high frequencies into the brain. And then you have tempo. What's really interesting in the literature is that theta tends to take up the tempo. So theta will register the tempo of a song. So it'll start to pace itself to the tempo of a song. So most of these songs you want to have between 60 and 80 beats per minute. And there's phrasing of a song, which is sort of the sentence of the music. So, and there were a few other things. And so I'm just like, I have no idea which of these is going to work. Let's just see if we get an effect. And so, you know, I'm so grateful to Peppino. This guy, if you ever get a chance, he's going to tour the East Coast, I think, next fall. He's a touring musician, and he's, you know, he's like I tease him. I'm like, you're like the Yo-Yo Ma of acoustic guitar. He was named as one of the 50 most transcendent guitarists of all times by Guitar Magazine. The guy is incredible. And to be sitting in a room with him and working on these songs was just, it was just stunningly beautiful and intimidating. So we put these songs together, and I recorded the pipe organ parts, and he recorded the guitar parts. And then I listened, you know, this is research. We have no idea what's going to happen. So we took 10 volunteers and did pre-post cues, had them listen to each song. And I think there were 9 songs. It turns out to be a huge amount, overwhelming amount of data. Mm. And I was just, I looked at this stuff and I was like, holy cow, like this actually worked. Like, when does this happen, you know, to you? Like, and you can just see these networks normalizing as the music is played in 3 or 4 minutes. And I actually had a clinician call me yesterday who bought the album, and she's like, wow, I put the live maps on and I just watched this person's brain just normalize while I was playing the music. And I don't know what to say about it. For some people, I'm sure it does not work for everybody, but for some people the effect's really profound. And then I started using it with some of my talk therapy patients and clinically in other ways.
It's so you're getting EEG. Mm-hmm. I guess as you were talking, sort of wondering, well, what will work for whom? I wonder if you can even somehow figure out a way to match which song to use based on the cue.
So this album is really geared towards a certain kind of map. Mm-hmm. And you know what's really odd though, I'll tell you, is some of these people who had excess slow waves, and then you play this slow wave music and those normalize too. And I don't know if it's because sort of the reverse of what we were talking about before, right? Like it's just moving things towards normal because it's putting in a normalized signal to the brain, in which case, right, if you're too high or too low, it's still going to have an effect. But I don't have, you know, $500,000 to do a proper
study or more on this.
Right, or more. So unfortunately, we're kind of stuck on this case series data. But I think what you're bringing up is the right way to think about it. It isn't that the music is doing something to people. It's how do you match the music and the characteristics of the music to what it is that person needs. And the more we learn about how types of music are affecting the brains of different people, we'll become more and more sophisticated about it. But we don't know that right now. What I think of though is that, why wouldn't you try this? I mean, music is cheap. Your clients want to take it home and listen. I've had people that have been listening to this album 3 times a day for months. I mean, it's pretty hard to get compliance on.
It is.
HRV as we know, or other kinds of homework. And you know, I have this woman with complex PTSD, and she just listens to it. She's able to sleep now. I mean, it's a kind of a stunning experience as a clinician when you have that, when you see that.
So this is a really interesting use of music as intervention rather than, I don't know, expression, which I guess is sort of the more typical way we talk about music or other creativity. How do you find that balance? Because you're both artist and clinician, both.
I love that you asked that question, and I wish Peppino were here because, mm-hmm, you know, he's really an expressive musician, and he writes music to express himself. And this was just such a different experience. And he laughs. He says, you know, like, I never thought I would be happy when my music put people to sleep.
Right.
Right. Like,
I mean, I'm sure he wants his audience to feel something, but maybe not.
But not to have extent them all snoring, yeah, right? And so I think when we had the preliminary conversation to this, one of the things we both agreed on is that we wanted this music to have an effect, but we also wanted the music to stand on its own so that it would just be nice music that you would want to listen to. And that's a sweet spot that takes someone who has his level of capacity to find. And I think we found it on this album. And, you know, so I think, yes, there's a very expressive part to this, because if it wouldn't have been he and I working on this and someone took those same parameters, it would be different music, because it right. is music that's emanating from us. And we had lots of conversations about, you know, I would hear a chord, a certain chord behind the guitar this way. And I'm like, does this chord work for you? Kind of yes, kind of no. Let's search around and find another one. And so when you collaborate with someone like this, it becomes something that it's an emanation of the two of you. It's not even an emanation of him or an emanation of me. That can be hard too, to collaborate, you know, because
sure.
sometimes you hear things differently and you think you're right.
Well, you know, there's all the stories about, you know, the groups that broke up because they couldn't collaborate and such, but this actually, you know, may add another dimension to that, where we're looking at, well, the effects of the sound may actually be different on the brains of the different people collaborating. And so how do you know, so you are going to have a different perspective on it, a different take on it.
That would be so cool, wouldn't it? To like hook ourselves up while we're, if you could get rid of all the artifact, it'd be really fun to hook ourselves up while we were actually working on this, because there is a certain synergy when you're composing with someone. Mm-hmm. And that sort of sync up thing that happens, which we know, you know, I'm editing this book that Elsevier's going to publish this year called Rhythm and Entrainment and Neuromodulation. And so mm-hmm. when you start to look at rhythm and entrainment between people, so you and I are in training to each other right now in this conversation.
Right.
And when you think about composing with a musician or two musicians working together, you have, if you have very strong entrainment, it changes everything.
Well, I know that there's work that's being done on multiple, working with multiple people and collecting physiologic data from them as they work through problems or exercises of some sort. It would be really interesting to do this for artists who are collaborating.
Yeah, and there's actually some data on, it's mostly, you know, heart rate, GSR. There is a little bit of EEG data on musicians playing together and audience members. And of course their heartbeats tend all to sync, et cetera, et cetera. But I don't know if they're syncing because they're syncing with each other or they're in training to the music, you know, that they're playing. It's hard to know.
Right. But
it's such a rich field, and there's probably so much we could learn. And now we have instrumentation that we didn't have even 10 years ago to really look at these markers with people. But, you know, the music thing is, there's something about when you're playing music. Are you a musician?
A little bit.
You know, yeah. When you're playing with somebody and you feel that connection, it mm-hmm. feels so deep. There's really nothing like it.
It really is an entrainment of some sort, a coherence, if you will.
It's a coherence, yeah. I think is yeah. a good term for that.
Steal that. And it would be really interesting to measure that in groups of people, or at least duos.
Yeah. There's actually an amazing international concert pipe organist here in this Bay Area, and he has a project called Resonance. And what they do is they play music to people before they go into meetings for mediation or all this kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And it changes, you know, the intent is to change the outcome. They don't have any data. They need to collect data. But it's a beautiful idea, really.
We'll return to my conversation with Dr. Minton in the next episode. This is Healthy Brain, Happy Body. I'm your host, Dr. Saul Rosenthal. Our guide today was Dr. Barbara Minton, psychologist, musician, and neuroscientist. Find out more about her and her album, Calm the Storm, in the show notes or at musicandhealing.net. Subscribe to this podcast by clicking the subscribe here link or wherever you get your podcasts. If you enjoy Healthy Brain, Happy Body, please rate us and leave reviews at Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. Reviews help us get to more listeners, and that's more people who can learn about and benefit from biofeedback, neurofeedback, and other mind-body approaches to health. And let us know what you think by sending us email. Our address is healthybrain@nrbs.org. Healthy Brain, Happy Body is produced and edited by me. The theme music is Catch It by Calma Media. It is a production of the Northeast Region Biofeedback Society. Go to nrbs.org to find out more about the organization, including our trainings, monthly webinars, and yearly conference. All opinions expressed are those of our guests and not the NRBS. Healthy Brain, Happy Body is not meant to replace advice from qualified healthcare providers. We're supported by the sponsors of NRBS and by the International Society of Neuroregulation and Research. Be sure to join us on our next episode as we continue to explore the keys to our well-being on Healthy Brain, Happy Body.